Hello there. You're listening to The Box Office Show. I'm Ryan Hill.
And I'm Dylan Johnson. Today we're going to be talking about the box office numbers from last weekend and our box office predictions for this upcoming weekend.
And as a sequel to the Royal Rumble rant earlier this year, we'll talk about my experience at the grandest stage of them all, WrestleMania 40. Then we'll get Dylan's reactions as a non-wrestling fan to some iconic wrestling moments and matches that I've picked out for him. Start with the news. We will be covering CinemaCon next week, but the annual festival event get together of all the theater owners and all the studios that are presenting films and their upcoming slates. We'll be covering that next week. But there were some notable things that happened this past week that we want to give a shout out to. Oftentimes we'll have to report the death of a famous film, TV actor. It'll be quite sad. This time, not at all. We're not sad about it. O.J. Simpson is dead at 76.
Good riddance.
Passed away from cancer. And you're right. Good riddance. The thing, though, that is so, like, always so fascinating about him and the trial and everything around that is everyone knows at this point. Like, everyone knows. And yet he was in jail for, what, 15 years or something like that for a completely unrelated thing to that whole incident, the whole murder of Nicole Brown Simpson, Ron Goldman. So that's just always wild to me. And what's truly sad, though, is he was released. So he lived the past, what, 4 or 5 years, something like that, just out and about, able to, you know, die not in jail. That's crazy to me.
What was really funny was I found out the news while I was at work doing training. I was sitting in the break room, and on the TV they had the sports channel on, and it was OJ had passed away, and he was labeled as OJ Simpson, former NFL player, passes away at 76. And I'm thinking that is just not that's not what he's most known for. He's not most notably a former NFL player.
Yeah, it's fallen down the list of the.
I think you could pull a lot of people our age and ask them who OJ Simpson is, and none of them, like a good chunk of them, will probably not know that he was an NFL player. They'll only know him from that murder and the murder trial.
Yeah. Or at the least, they would know. I mean, they'd know like sort of the TV stuff because he turned Hollywood his NFL career. So I'm sure he's like most known for that. But then obviously, I mean, far and away, it's the trial of the century. Everyone knows that. Yeah, I found out on the toilet, and I thought that was apt for OJ Simpson. But yeah, the thing I want to bring up, though, I think we talked about before on the show, I've always wanted to do an episode on it, People versus OJ Simpson, American Crime Story. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah, of course. We've talked about it. It's awesome. Yeah.
It's excellent. Excellent stuff, and truly mind-boggling, because, I mean, we obviously didn't live through that, that whole media circus as it was going on, but to see all the events just like shown, all the twists and turns of that entire trial, it was insane. So that is a great series to go back and watch, limited series. And then I know there's, well, there's a documentary, I think 2016, something like
that.
Came
out around the same time.
That was, OJ Made in America. I haven't seen that yet, but now I want to go back through and watch that. Because, again, it's just an insane moment in American history and definitely changed the landscape as far as, like, media coverage and all that. So, very notable. It's unfortunate, again, that he wasn't able to be brought to justice for that crimes. But I'm glad that, like, the Goldman family was able to at least outlive OJ and can, even though it doesn't really bring peace or make up for anything, at least they don't have to walk around in a world anymore knowing that OJ is also out there walking around. But yeah, turning to brighter news, Conan O'Brien. Did you see his Hot Ones appearance? I just needed to bring this up because it will bring you so much joy when you go and watch it.
I wanted to watch him on The Tonight Show.
I watched that too. Again, he's great. It's so hilarious watching him on because he just commands it. Like Jimmy Fallon is there as the host, but I mean, it's clearly like Conan is holding the reins and everything with that. But then seeing him on Hot Ones as well, it is so hilarious. Again, cried laughing watching it. You'll definitely have to watch it after this. We finish recording here.
I will.
Also, there's a lot of like funny bits in there and running gags. I'm not going to spoil any of them for you, but I do want to point out that Conan is on our side with the name change from HBO Max to Max being so stupid. There's like multiple times he brings it up in the thing. And one of them was, he's like, oh, my new show is on Max because people thought HBO was too popular. So they had to change it to Max. I agree with him. We should just only call it HBO Max. Screw Max.
I've never just once called it Max. It's always HBO Max.
It's never happened. And so many like casual people or people that I'm talking to, like on my coworkers are not like film majors. And they also, it's like only HBO Max. People refer to it as that. So I'm like, nice. People are not going with the stupid Max thing that they did. It just, it truly will never make sense to me.
It'll always be HBO Max.
Yeah, Conan O'Brien, his new show coming on HBO Max, April 18th, Conan O'Brien Must Go, which is basically just the whole, the travel segments that he did from his old TBS show, which were always like the highlights are amazing. So I'm looking forward to that. And you got to watch his Hot Ones episode.
Again, I will.
Comedic genius.
I will. Now we can do our box office breakdown for April 5th to the 7th, coming in first place, to nobody's surprise, Godzilla X Kong, New Empire, $31 million with only a 60% drop from the previous weekend. Stronghold, Ryan. You like that?
Not as strong as I would have hoped, but it is a good hold. I mean, it was coming off a holiday weekend, I suppose, so it was expected to be a bit more of the dreaded 60% blockbuster drop. But hey, it's doing well for itself, so I am very pleased with that performance. In second place, we had Monkey Man with $10
million.
Dylan.
Yeah, bummer. I didn't even see it.
You did not. Yeah, you didn't go support it. You're like, yeah, 25, 30 mil, something like that.
I need to carve out time to go to the theaters because I do want to see Monkey Man and I do want to see Late Night with the Devil before this next weekend comes out with Civil War coming out that I have to go see. So I got to start heading back to the theaters. I live so much closer now that I moved. I'm right next to the movie theater. Take me 2 seconds. I am just busy, I guess. Very, very busy. But I have more time coming up. And I'll commit more time to the new releases. I really want to see Late Night with the Devil. I've heard very good things.
I mean, go see it quick because that one, I think.
That one's going to go soon, yeah.
Maybe having its last week, yeah, yep. This upcoming week.
It might still be at Enzion, but if it's still at Regal, I'd rather just go to Regal.
Nah, because Enzion's about to have their the Florida Film Festival. So
I'm sure you're right.
All the screens are going to be locked up for that.
Yeah, absolutely. After Monkey Man was Ghostbusters Final Empire with is it Final Empire? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I thought it was Frozen Empire. That's confusing.
Funny. They all blend together. New Empire, Final Empire, Frozen Empire.
Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, 9 million. I was going to say Final Empire sounds like it's the final entry in the series, and I'm sure they're going to make another one probably. It's not doing great, but
yeah.
I'm sure they wanted to when they were in the production status. They wouldn't call it Final Empire if it's only the second one they've made. But Ghostbusters would be Frozen hilarious. Empire made 9 million.
So yeah, we'll see if it does end up being the final installment. But yeah, Frozen Empire in third place. The First Omen with $8.3 million in its debut.
Kung Fu Panda 4 with $7.7 million, bringing its worldwide total to over $400 million. That's awesome.
And Dune Part 2 with $7.3 million. It's now over $650 million worldwide. So we have confirmation. If it stayed, again, we never know because the release dates are different. But I believe, you know, with the whole holiday corridor, if it came out in November of last year, as originally planned, and part of my slate, then I would have won.
Yeah, it's too damn bad. And now what's funny is I'm going to use it to beat you because right now I have officially crossed the first $1 billion mark of the year.
That is true. With just two films,
my total gross has crossed the first billion mark.
There we go. So we'll see.
I'm aiming for at least 2.5.
Well, yeah, I think we can definitely get that. I think we got over 4 billion. Did or maybe we? It was no. 3.5 billion. I think 4 billion might be the overall like high score crossing that threshold.
Well, neither of us are going to get there this year. But
yeah, probably not. But who knows? The 3 bill mark, I think, is definitely possible.
Yep.
So we'll be reaching for that. But congratulations, you did cross your first bill. So
absolutely. After Dune Part 2 was Someone Like You with $2.9 million.
Arthur the King 1.5 million.
Immaculate, 1.3 million.
And right on its heels, Wicked Little Letters, 1.3 million.
Now we got some exciting news for the box office predictions for April 12th to the 14th. This isn't the first time we've had an A24 movie in our box office predictions. This is the first time we might have a heavy hitter coming from A24 making some decent money. I mean, this is their big blockbuster picture that they're putting out. It's supposed to take in a lot of money like any other blockbuster might. Ryan, do you think it's going to do what A24 needs it to do to succeed? Do you think it's going to hit big blockbuster numbers?
Now, what are we talking about when we say blockbuster numbers?
Like,
because it's a different blockbuster than, say, Godzilla.
Sure, sure. I'm thinking like $30 million floor would be like a traditional blockbuster for an opening weekend.
Right. Yeah, I don't think it's going to hit that mark.
That's disappointing.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Because they put a lot of money into it. I was thinking like 25.
I kind of agree with that, yeah. I think it will get over 20 mil, which I think would make it the biggest like A24 opening.
Sure.
So it'll succeed on that front. I just don't think it'll be...
It won't hit the numbers it needs to be considered a blockbuster in our realm, especially considering how much money I think they put into it, which was a decently budgeted project compared to their other projects.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, somewhere around 20, but again, I don't think it'll get above 30 million.
Yeah.
But it'll be a solid opening. It'll do what it needs to do to get on the record books for A24. It just won't bring the house down, I think. But yeah, we'll look forward to that when we talk about it next week. All right, now let's move on to the main event of the show, WrestleMania 40. And talking about my whole endeavor with that. So Dylan, as you recall, during our grab bag for the month of January, talked about my experience at the Royal Rumble,
yeah,
which took place in Tampa. And then can't remember, because that was like a week after the Royal Rumble had happened and the whole thing with The Rock coming out and confronting Roman Reigns had happened at that point. So I was pissed at that point because I thought we were going to get swerved. I thought they were going to absolutely screw over my man Cody Rhodes, stop him from finishing the story at the biggest, you know, stage of them all, WrestleMania, but particularly the 40th anniversary. Because it's always the time when you have the big baby faces come out and claim victory. Mm. So I was upset by that point. But then they turned it around.
Mm-hmm.
They made The Rock a heel. They leaned into the fact that he was trying to pull the strings and push Cody aside so he could have a main event with his own cousin, Roman Reigns. And they leaned into that storyline. And it was so good. The buildup for this was crazy. Had you seen any of the stuff from The Rock?
No.
Like from the heel stuff that he was doing. But basically this man was, and again, you have to understand, around, I don't know, the late 2000s, they made it PG. So all the crazy stuff that was going on, like the late 90s, early 2000s, they scaled that down to make it more kid friendly. So even things like swearing, right, had become a no-no for wrestling, which is crazy. Again, and they used to, you know, be bleeding a lot more. There was one, and this is just to showcase like what the direction was for this. There was one instance where The Rock brutally attacks Cody Rhodes, is swearing up a storm, like dropping F-bombs left and right here, makes Cody Rhodes bleed by like throwing him into a bus, and then takes out a weight belt that says Mama Rhodes on it, because that was the thing The Rock was doing this whole time. As you know from Cody Rhodes, his dad was never able to win the championship, so he wants to win the WWE championship for his dad. But of course, his dad's no longer around, so he can't hand that championship to his father, but he can hand it to his mother. That was like a promo Cody had cut. The Rock took that and ran with it and was like, the only thing Mama Rhodes is going to be given is this weight belt that's going to have the blood of Cody Rhodes on it and the tears of Mama Rhodes on it. And then he started whipping Cody Rhodes with it. So this man was going insane, leaning into the villainous final boss character. That was also what he started calling himself too, since now he's on the board of TKO, which owns WWE, all of that. So the buildup was insane. Up until last week, or I guess 2 weeks ago now, but it was last week that I told you that I was going to WrestleMania. But up until that point, I didn't know if I was going to be able to go because the prices were just getting too high at that point. I was trying to coordinate with like two separate groups of people that I've gone to previous wrestling events with, and things weren't working out either financially or scheduling wise. So I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to go. Mm-hmm. But I was able to go so that I could see my man Cody Rhodes finish the story.
Finish the story.
So we'll talk about that. But two nights, right? WrestleMania now has become a two-night affair. It was taking place in Philly. So we were driving up no matter what on Friday night to try and get up there.
Oh, you drove to Philly? Spot.
Yes.
Oh, wow. I thought you flew.
It was a whole road trip. And then, so we would get there on Saturday. We were about an hour out. We were at this place. This is a crazy, like the biggest mall I've ever seen. It was like this massive outdoor mall, but there was like an inside component too. Mm-hmm. It was Arundel Hills or Falls or something like that. I forget exactly what the name was mm-hmm. of the city we were in, but it was massive. And we were at some like restaurant there. And it was an hour away from where we were going to stay, which is like Wilmington, Newark, Delaware, which is about 30, 40 minutes from Philly. So we were there and we were talking through what we were going to do because we're right. I mean, we would be there. We'd be essentially right outside of Philly for night one, but we had only gotten tickets for night two because that's when Cody and Roman would be doing the main event. Mm-hmm. So we were tossing back and forth the ideas of either plan A, which was watch it in the hotel room, order in some pizza, just have a little watch party, or we could try and secure tickets and drive up there to Philly and watch The Rock wrestle in the main event of that night, which would have been Cody and Seth versus The Rock and Roman Reigns. Here's the thing, Dylan.
Yeah.
When I'm traveling for whatever reason in a plane or in a car, it's really difficult for me to fall asleep.
Really?
Yes.
That's crazy because I fall asleep like a motherfucker. I just knock out.
Dude, when I'm in a bed, easy. Never had trouble getting to sleep. It's amazing. But traveling for whatever reason, it just does not work out. I just can't fall asleep. So that's to say, for the 15-hour drive up that we started at like 10 p.m. And drove throughout the whole night, I did not get a lick of sleep. Maybe like 30 minutes that whole time. And I was up the whole day doing like other things, like work and stuff like that, working on the film. So I had been up for well over 24 hours at that point. And we were going to, this was what, 4 p.m., 3 p.m. I think we were having this conversation. Mm-hmm. Show starts at 7 p.m. It would go until 11 p.m. Factor in the 40-minute drive back home. Factor in the hour of trying to get out of the parking lot, basically. So we were like, we're going to be pulling a crazy day.
You're coming close to 36 hours awake.
Yes, a day and a half. Little sleep. And so we were factoring that into of like, we're going to be so tired, but the energy in there, I feel like, would keep us going. But that'd be a lot to contend with. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, we were weighing the options. It was a split decision, but we were like, we got to go for it. It's WrestleMania 40. It's The Rock. Rey Mysterio was also wrestling that night.
Your favorite.
Like, I want to see him in person. Yeah. So I was like, you know what? Let's do it. Let's pull the trigger. Let's go. And I'll tell you what. Maybe it would have been nicer to stay in the hotel room because we at least would have been warm. It was so freezing on night one. Because we were going up north, right, to Philly. So I knew already it'd be cold, which is unfortunate. Again, like April and it being 50-degree weather. But at night, with the winds that were up to like 25, 30 mile per hour or something like that. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous. It was freezing. It was so cold.
Oof.
We're a bunch of Florida boys going up there. I mean, we had packed stuff, but we were not prepared for it to be that cold on night one. And we weren't prepared to go on night one. So, I mean, I was bundled up. ultimately I did okay, but it was freezing. What's worse, I can imagine being all those wrestlers down there in half or a quarter of the clothes that we're in, having to wrestle in that weather. Yeah. That's unfortunate. But ultimately, it was great to be in there because we did get to see The Rock in person wrestle, and they went for a while. It was like the second longest WrestleMania match, I think, of all time, or at least main event.
How long was it?
Of all time. It was like 45 minutes, Jesus. That match alone. But factor in their entrances, it was like an hour 10.
Good God.
They love to have their entrances, Roman and The Rock especially. But yeah, I mean, he put on a show. Again, the man's 51 years old.
Yeah.
Also, his look, you kind of saw it because I know you saw some of the highlights, but that was from night two. Mm-hmm. Look up The Rock night one, WrestleMania 40, his like entrance gear.
Okay.
He looked so cool. The ring gear on that. He had this vest that sort of, and you saw it too. Like even back in the 90s, he would wear like the silk shirts. He switched over to wearing like the vests, sleeveless vests. So he brought that back for his heel persona during this latest run, and comes out with the shades, comes out with that like custom Brahma Bull, like People's Champion that was given to him by Muhammad Ali's wife. And then that vest. Looks so good. Are you bringing it up?
I'm trying to look for it. It's not popping up. Just keep going. Yeah. So who else wrestled that night?
So there were seven matches that night. Again, the main people that I guess would be relevant for you would be, I mean, seeing The Rock, seeing Rey Mysterio. Triple H came out and opened up the show. That was a big thing too, of the Vince era officially being done, because he came out and he's like, welcome to a new time, a new era. Welcome to WrestleMania. So that sent the crowd on fire. So yeah, those I think would be the main people that would be irrelevant for you that you would recognize. I'm trying to think of any. Because yeah, Gunther, Sami Zayn, you wouldn't know.
So what did Rey Mysterio do when you were there?
It was a tag team match.
Okay.
Between him and Andrade versus Santos Escobar and Dominic Mysterio. His son. So for the second time in a row, he had a match against his son, who's right now playing as a heel. So they're like not on good terms at all. Mm-hmm. That was a funny match, though. That was definitely one of the gimmick matches where the finish was two people coming out in Rey Mysterio masks, but we don't know who they are. They're like massive as well. So it's like they're not the normal like luchador wrestling types. And then they pull off the masks and it's Jason Kelsey of the Philadelphia Eagles, and then another Philadelphia Eagles football player who I didn't recognize. But so they had them come out. So obviously the hometown crowd was like, oh, snap. So that was fun that they had had them come out. But yeah, so that was awesome. Have you pulled up the picture? Is it your
Dude, I just, no. I mean, it's not popping up. Like, it does not exist. This happened like a week ago, man.
It doesn't exist?
I'm not finding a picture of him from night one. Just move on.
Just say The Rock, night one entrance.
What? Jesus. I mean, I have the full show.
The full show?
I have the WrestleMania 40 night one full show, an hour and a half on YouTube.
Well, it was 4 hours, so.
So it's definitely not the whole show, yeah. They probably meant the main event. It's probably the whole main event.
Right. Which, I mean, yeah, it was about that long. But anyway. Night two was much warmer, thank God. So it wasn't as much of an issue, but it was funny. We went out and tried to get like gloves, mittens, because that was the main issue, was they're trying to take photos, right? But their fingers are freezing off. I didn't really have that problem, thankfully. I think it was in my jacket. It was nice and toasty in me pockets. So I wasn't having that issue, but yeah, my two friends were. So we went out to do a Walmart run to get some gloves or mittens, and they didn't have any.
What the
fuck? At the one we went. So we bought thermal socks. And then as I'm on the road, I'm like, we also bought scissors. So I'm cutting out little finger holes for the thumb and index finger so we can like hold our phones. So that was pretty funny. And ultimately, we didn't really end up needing it as much because, again, it was far warmer. And that also meant I don't know if it was the cold that really translated to it, but or if everyone else, I guess, was tuckered out from their road trips, maybe. But night one versus night two for the crowds, it was night and day. Night two was much more engaged. The crowd was much more alive. There was this one.
Okay, I see The Rock thing. Now. He's got the sleeveless vest on and the pants. He's got the glasses on.
Yes.
I can see him now. Climbing into the ring.
So cool.
Holding up the belt.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's special. That belt is ridiculous, though. Him like holding it like it's an actual championship belt when it's just some custom belt that he was given. Yeah. But yeah, it was great. But anyway, so yeah, he looked great, too. Mm-hmm. For again, the man's 51.
Yeah, yeah, he's built.
He's been out of action for a while. I mean, we've seen him obviously bulk up like crazy, but now he has to get into cardio shape, basically, mm-hmm. to be running around the ring and all that. And he looked fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so night two, crowd was much more alive. There was one, I'll show you videos whenever we like meet up at some point soon, but there was, and this never happened night one, so I don't know if it was just the way that they were flashing the lights at the crowd was different, but there would be times during the match where certain sections of the crowd, there would just be one of those spotlights mm-hmm. that are like shining up at them.
Yeah.
And I will say about the like Philly stadium,
mm-hmm.
the way that they structured the monitors, like to be able to see if you're like up in the nosebleeds, basically to see like the camera view, was not the best.
Oh no.
Dallas by far had the best for that. But this one it's like at either ends. So like the end zone monitors basically.
Okay.
But it's like small. Cause it's,
oh,
I mean, it's a long strip basically around the whole like end zone thing, but obviously you can't, you know, crop a, mm-hmm. what it would be a standard, you know, aspect ratio to that.
Yeah.
So it's only a portion of it. Oh, and so it's fairly small. So you mainly have to look at the ring. There's the pillars that go up on each corner.
Uh-huh.
And there's like the covering, the tarp. And then they set monitors on each side of that. So, you know, each section, each direction can look at it.
Yeah.
But that's also where all the like trusses and whatnot were for the spotlights.
Uh-huh.
And so when they shine up at the crowd, you could get blinded and you can't see the actual monitor. So that was happening during the, it was like the second match of night two where that started happening. And so people started chanting, turn off the lights and other like variations of that to try and get the people working the show to turn off the lights. And then they would, and then people would cheer. And then when it came back on, people would boo. So that happened a few times throughout the match and it was funny. And I was like, they could leverage that to just like do effective crowd control, where if they want people to boo somebody, they just flash on those lights.
That is funny.
And be a ton of boos. And then when they wanted a big pop for a cheer of someone, they can just turn the lights off and everyone would be like, yeah.
Smart.
So yeah, they didn't actually do that, but I was like, that'd be funny if they started puppeteering the crowd that way. But anyway, so that showed how much more lively the crowd was on night two. As far as some complaints,
mm-hmm.
I just need to bring up, you know, Prime, the energy drink company.
I've tried it, yeah.
Logan Paul and KSI. You've tried it?
I've tried it.
Your thoughts?
It's not bad.
Not bad.
It's not bad. I mean, there's no sugar and it's very low calorie and it doesn't taste that bad.
Well, I 100% condemn the Prime bottle company, the Prime bottle logo, all of that stuff. Because you know what they did?
What?
First of all, it's worse enough that Logan Paul is now like a fairly consistent wrestler in the WWE.
Sure.
And he currently has a United States champion.
Okay.
You know who he won that off of?
I forget.
Rey Mysterio.
Ah, that's fucked.
Disgusting. You know, the first WrestleMania that I saw Rey Mysterio at was 38, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that was? It was a tag team match.
Mm-hmm.
Rey and Dominic versus The Miz and Logan Paul.
Mm-hmm.
You know who won that match?
Logan Paul?
Yes. So this man is unfortunately very tied in with like the Rey Mysterio story. And they keep giving him wins over Rey Mysterio. It pisses me off so much. That's the one thing too about Rey Mysterio, because we went into this, there's like three streaks that have been upheld Every time we go in person to see Rey Mysterio, he loses. Thankfully, that streak was broken this time. Every time we go to see a Paul brother, Jake Paul included, in person, they win.
Mm.
And also Roman Reigns, every time we go and see him, he wins. So we were like, we know one of those streaks has to break. And then night one, we saw Rey Mysterio had broken that. So I was hoping, I was like, maybe Logan will lose. But regardless, his company, the Prime Bottle, mm-hmm. they put that in the center of the ring.
Sure.
In both nights. I thought it was just going to be a gimmick for like the Logan Paul match. But no, it was both nights. So I'm sitting there thinking, there's no way that we're going to see the culmination of Cody Rhodes' story. And we're going to have to see him pin Roman Reigns on top of a Prime Bottle in the middle of the ring. Disgusting.
It's just a fucking logo. Who cares?
I hate that.
If it wasn't that, it would just be a different fucking logo.
No, it wouldn't, though. That's the thing. This is the first time they've ever done this.
Oh, really?
In the WWE, yes. Again, Vince McMahon, terrible person, awful person. Greediest mofo alive.
Of course.
Truly.
Terrible.
But the one thing he never did was sell out the canvas, the middle of the ring. He never put a single ad on it once.
Yeah, but do you know how much money you could generate from that?
You could, but that's what I'm saying. Like the fact that Vince, of all people, knows the dollar signs that could come in from that, and yet he chose to respect the ring and just let it be clean. I mean, credit to him, at least for that one thing. It's a shame that they're now not going to do that. I mean, this opens the doors for any other major company to come in and sponsor the ring in some way.
Sure, I guess. So unfortunate. I just kind of look around logos at this point. They're just everywhere.
Which is annoying, but it's in the middle of the ring. And they go to certain shots now that are like top down so you can see the ring specifically. And I'm like, that's so...
Top down shot's stupid. I'll give you that.
Ugly.
Because you just can't see what's going on in a top down shot. Unless they're one's on top of the other for a pin, maybe a top down shot might look cool. But for the most part, top down shots do not work in any kind of fighting capacity.
Right. So that to me is a real shame. Disrespectful to the ring. And again, I was like, ugh. Just gonna, anytime you go back and look at Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, then you have to see that in there. Hate it for one of the biggest WrestleMania moments ever.
Sure.
But that aside, the main event of night two, Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes to finish the story. The way they set this up too, which was brilliant, was night one in that tag team match, if Roman Reigns and The Rock won, then match two, or, you know, night two, the main event of that, it would be Bloodline Rules, which doesn't mean a thing. No one knows what that means, but basically it just means Bloodline can do whatever they want and interfere in the match. So what everyone was starting to think about was, who is Cody going to bring in to help him out? Because he had Seth Rollins on his side in night one, at least. But there are other people that have been burned by the Bloodline all throughout this. So everyone was speculating as to who could be coming in to support Cody. And let's just say, I mean, you saw it.
I watched the highlights,
the returns and everything. So we'll talk about that. But the thing that got me to like look back at the ticket prices, because, all right, so there's like five or six reasons that I wanted to go to WrestleMania 40.
Mm-hmm.
The sixth was Rhea Ripley. Who was in night one. She was a champion. She came out in night one, opened the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
Rhea Ripley, also known as Mommy. That's her whole gimmick as well. Look her up. She's like got this gothic aesthetic and everything. They're part of the Judgment Day, like an evil group at the moment, but Dominic's a part of that.
Okay, I see her, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So to see her, to see the megastar, with everybody saying, L.A. Knight.
Yeah.
He's great. L.A. Knight. And then he was also Knight 2. So that was great to see him versus AJ Styles. And then to see my boy Ray, of course. To see The Rock. And then, of course, I mean, the number one, of course, was to see Cody finish the story. But the very next one below that, and the one that got me to check the ticket prices again, because I thought it was done. You know this. You knew. I was like, I'm not going to be able to go. Prices are too high. People are unable to go to it.
Yeah.
But then I, because of this, because knowing the Bloodline rules were going to be in effect for night two, because everyone assumed, okay, night one, you have Cody lose somehow. It raises the stakes more, gives him more adversity to overcome in the second match. It'll make it hit that much more when he finishes a story. So then everyone's speculating about who can show up, right? Who's going to be there to be the Cody Avengers, basically, right? Like the end game, Avengers end game of this. Who's going to be on his side? So people were throwing out, we knew like the Usos, Jey Uso would be in there. People were throwing out names like Cena, Seth Rollins, all this stuff of who might show up. Again, LA Knight, Kevin Owens, like all the people that have dealt with him before. But the person that would have made the most sense and would have blown the roof off the place would have been Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah.
And think about it, which you saw kind of from the some of the promos that I sent to you. But the most iconic rivalry is Stone Cold and The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
The two biggest wrestlers at the biggest, you know, peak popularity time in wrestling in those late 90s, early 2000s. And they had a trio of matches at WrestleMania. So it's already built in. The biggest rivalry, the two biggest stars coming together one last time. And it especially makes sense because The Rock is currently like the heel persona.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the final boss. He's has all the power, has gone to his head. That sort of is reminiscent of back in the day when The Rock was siding with the corporation, with the McMahons. He was like the poster child for them. And you had Stone Cold as the anti-authority, anti-establishment figure coming in and tearing it down.
Mm.
So what better way to have the biggest WrestleMania of all time and the biggest main event of all time than having The Rock in there interfering? Everyone else has come and gone. There's no one else left. Who could it be other than Stone Cold? Then having the glass shatter, dude, it would have been an out-of-body experience. Literally, it would have been amazing. It would have been the biggest pop of all time. And so I was like, I need to be in the arena, in the stadium, if that happens, because it would be amazing, like a lifelong memory. So that's what got me to look back at the tickets. And I saw that they had come down a little bit. So it was more affordable. It made more sense. So then I talked to my boys again. I'm like, yo, let's reconsider this. I was able to get them to come on board for it. We went up again. Night one wasn't part of the cards initially, but then that obviously got on there. But I'll tell you what, it was one of the best decisions ever. Because it is so amazing being there in person when all that went down. It was electric, sensational. Again, it will be burned in my brain for the longest time. I'll need to show you again the videos too that have me like screaming in there. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So not only did Cody Rhodes finish the story, but we got all those crazy run-ins like we thought. John Cena came back for that moment, which is great. Huge pop for that. And then also The Undertaker.
The Undertaker.
Dude, nobody expected it. Because again, you're at, like the true casuals weren't expecting like anyone to come back. But then the people that are more in the know that are fantasy booking it, we were like, okay, Cena makes sense because he fought Solo Sikoa like earlier in 2023. He's got beef to pick with him. It makes sense. The whole Jey Uso, Jimmy Uso, I mean, that was obvious. But we're like, who could be another person come out? Everyone thought it'd be Stone Cold. No one expected Undertaker. Dude, when that gong hit, the Undertaker gong, crazy. That has to be one of the biggest pops of all time. It was so loud. It was deafening. And then, you know, he does the chokeslam, blah, blah, blah. And then we go back to Cody and Roman as he finishes it. That's also great storytelling, which, by the way, you can sort of comment on because you saw Cody and Roman the first match. But that his, you know, move that he's trying to do when he hooks him under his arm and like does the twist.
Yeah.
It's called the Crossroads. He kept trying to do the Crossroads Trinity in that initial WrestleMania match in 39. And then this time he kept trying to do it. And that's when the first interference would happen. And then he tries to do it again. He gets two of them done and he's going for the third. And then the interference happens again. So that was great too, that they built it up I was like, he finally can hit that third crossroads and then does the pin, gets the victory. You have the whole celebration afterwards. Like, everyone's coming out. John Cena, all the baby faces, CM Punk. That was also amazing on night two, the whole opening match with Drew and Seth, and then having CM Punk interfere after Drew had already won, and then you have the cash in. All that stuff was great. But it just felt, I mean, it was truly like a new era with Cody Rhodes being championed as the face of the company going to this new era. It was beautiful to see. And then they had, again, this is why I brought up the Mama Rhodes before. They brought Mama Rhodes into the ring. I don't know if it was in that highlight reel. I hope it was, but you saw
it wasn't, but I saw your video of it.
Yeah. And you see him able to give it to her, and it just hit so much. Like, I was getting choked up watching that, because truly, I mean, this was such a long time coming. I mean, he's been since like 07 or 08, I think, was his debut in WWE. Mm-hmm. He's been in it for a long time. And obviously ever since he was a kid, he's been part of the wrestling business. So, you know, he's been dreaming of that forever. And to go off and have to, again, essentially leave WWE, create a whole rival company that ends up going south, not the way he wanted, coming back. And then after 2 years, after his return, being able to finally win, defeating Roman Reigns. And again, like what we had talked about before, of like, you know, where the whole scripted stuff and the real life stuff, the backstage stuff blend together. It was going to be Rock versus Roman. Like, that was what they were building towards. They have this documentary that's going to come out soon called like Behind the Curtains and Everything of WrestleMania 40. But that was the plan. And it was because the fans were so behind Cody, screaming, you know, we want Cody during that next event, that they were like, okay, we got to reconsider and pivot and allow Cody to finish his story and have his moment at WrestleMania 40. It was perfect. It was beautiful. Being there in person was amazing. Oh my God.
Yeah. Finish the story. I'm so glad you had a good time, Ryan. It sounds like you had a lot of fun and you get to live out your wrestling dreams once again, as you always do. And now we can look forward to another year of wrestling with Cody Rhodes as the champion.
Absolutely. That is my man. As he said in his promo, the Raw after WrestleMania, once undesirable, become undeniable, and now undisputed WWE champion. So good.
Oh yeah.
So amazing. What a story. But yeah. All right. Let's now talk about some of the promos and matches that I made you watch. Just to, you know, again, as a non-wrestling fan, you were sort of interested in seeing more of like why this stuff connected with me, why I enjoy so much. Let's stay on Roman and Cody for the moment. So we're talking about the story. What I think now is a brilliant choice. Again, back then I was upset about it, but that's exactly what they wanted. Is he had the same build up. He's going to finish the story at WrestleMania 39. It made sense. It was the right time. It's a Hollywood ending. It was taking place in LA. And yet Roman won after
40 minutes. It's the Rocky finish. They gave him the Rocky.
The what now?
The Rocky. They gave him a Rocky finish. And then he ended in Philadelphia.
That's true. They did do that, yeah.
They gave him the Rocky story.
So it was great to see that. I mean, again, they kind of weren't exactly planning that since they were going to shift to Roman and The Rock, but the long-term booking of that absolutely makes WrestleMania 40 hit so much more. So in hindsight, that was a brilliant choice. It was also a great match. Like, I was watching it back, obviously watched it live, not in person, but, you know, on Peacock. Watching it, it was great. I rewatched it again last week. I sent it to you as like a bonus one. I knew because it was long, it was 40 minutes. I was like, if he doesn't watch it, that's fine. But I suspected you might want to give it a go.
Just give it a shot.
Roman and Cody were like the things I've been talking about so much lately. So what were your thoughts on that?
It was a long fucking match. And you know what? Fuck Solo. Fuck Solo, because he ruined it for Cody.
He did.
They made him like the secondary antagonist, really, really strong. He was the secondary heel for sure, because such an asshole. Because he gets ejected. He gets ejected like 10 minutes before the finish and then comes back out and swipes at Cody and makes him fall and gives Roman the advantage to pin him. That's so fucked, dude. That's so fucked.
That's a great moment, though. I had forgotten about that when I was rewatching, but hyping up the crowd, because we know like they interfere in the matches a lot. That's how a lot of Roman's matches go. Mm-hmm. So Solo getting ejected, was a great way to make people believe, oh, this could happen. Like, Cody could actually do it because now no one's going to interfere. But then, of course, he comes back and takes it from him, screws Cody over.
Which is crazy. So, but that was a long match that they had. Like, they were out there and they were really throwing themselves. It felt like neither of them were – they're agile, but they're both just such big performers that they were just slamming into each other really, really strongly and doing the moves that they know. I mean, they were playing it up more than some of the other videos you have me watch. The other ones, they were more focused on the actual fighting, and there were moments where Roman Reigns could go out and talk to his coach or whatever and like build up the story in front of the camera. And they had people coming out to fight for them. They had the two people for Roman Reigns fighting the two people for Cody. Like they had cheesy moments for sure. But when it was just Roman Reigns and Cody and they were just in the ring fighting each other, they were really throwing each other at it. And it was great. I like the table dive they did. That was great.
Mm-hmm. Always love it when they bring in the tables.
Mm-hmm.
The announced tables always get wrecked. But yeah, again, I thought that the way they, and it's different, you know, being in person, obviously you don't have the commentary. So that was different because, yeah, I think like 38 and 37, I still haven't gone back and like actually watched those matches with the commentary over it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the commentary can help guide the story and show like how you're supposed to be interpreting some of the events that are taking place, because there is a lot of physical storytelling that they're doing. And so getting some of that additional context from the commentators can be nice. I like the way that they framed it here, which was, oh, Roman is so used to this stuff. He's beaten so many challengers. And then slowly as Cody keeps like kicking out of these things and keeps overcoming some of the interferences, Roman's getting more and more like distraught and like, I can't beat this guy. Like, what's going on? So
yeah, he keeps breaking out of those finishes. It's a lot similar to the HBK versus Undertaker fight that you showed me, where Undertaker has these finisher moves that he's famous for. I mean, he's 16-0 at WrestleMania at this point,
mm-hmm.
and he's fighting HBK, and HBK keeps sneaking out of those Undertaker moves. So Undertaker becomes more and more frustrated and distraught in his eyes and in his face, and it just goes on forever and ever, and they keep kicking out, and it's just like, Undertaker just has no idea what to do now. He has no idea how to beat HBK because he keeps slipping out of it and keeps getting up.
For sure. Did you watch the hype package?
I did.
Did they send with that as well? Okay, nice. So you got the whole sense
16-0,
of
yep.
Undertaker 16-0. This is like his whole thing is being undefeated at WrestleMania. But then you have Shawn Michaels, who, as they say in that package, he is Mr. WrestleMania. Like mm-hmm. he puts on these bangers constantly, all the time, but especially at the biggest show, the show of shows. So they hyped that up really well. And then they too had history. I think in the commentary during the match, they like spoke to some of it, but in the 90s, like they were wrestling against each other. They had some historic matches. They had the first like Hell in a Cell match together. And then ultimately when HBK had to retire for a little bit due to an injury, he was in a match with Undertaker that happened. So all of that buildup, the history between the two of them definitely made it such a monumental match. But then the actual match itself, which I was like, I think you'd be able to appreciate even without all that history and context behind it, because they do such a good job of leveraging that physical storytelling of, as you said there, like the reactions. And the way that, you know, it starts off, HBK is using his speed because obviously he's a lot smaller than Undertaker. But he's able to use his speed to his advantage and be wily and sort of slip around him. So the fact that they lean into that stuff during the early parts of the match. And then towards the ends of the match, when they're just both worn out and tired, exhausted, beaten down, I think they sell that extremely well
how
desperately each of them are trying to put these like final moves on the other person,
mm-hmm.
believing they've done
slamming it, and trying to do high dives and then there's a last minute dodge and they slam into the board and they're down. The number of times
what'd you think of that moment?
There were a couple times that happened.
Suicide dive over the ropes when Taker ran
mm-hmm.
and dived over the top rope. What'd you think of that?
It's a hard hit to take, dude.
It's an extremely hard hit. That's because, again, this dude is almost 7 feet tall.
Yeah, he's like 300 pounds.
Over the top rope, which the athletic ability there is insane. They also had the match, too, where he like walks on the top rope insane for a man of
size. That was crazy to watch him balance on that thing. I was like, I don't know how the fuck he's doing that. But Undertaker's dude, in the hype package that they did where they were showing Undertaker 16-0 victories, all the WrestleManias he won, the tombstone move back to back to back to back to back, dude, the tombstone goes so fucking hard. It is the ultimate finisher. It does. How the fuck do they do that without breaking their necks?
It's insane. One of the best finishers ever.
It is my favorite. I think Undertaker's my favorite after watching all these videos. And
after watching that, nice.
Like, Rey Mysterio has some moments, but dude, the tombstone move from Undertaker is insane. What a finisher.
Yeah, it's mostly like only he's sort of allowed to do that move now because he's so tall and he can do it in a certain way where he doesn't break their necks.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's the pile driver. People used to do it where they would like sit like down while that's happening. And that's broken a few people, like Stone Cold. The reason he had to retire is because his neck got messed up from someone doing a pile driver on him. So yeah, Undertaker's version of that, the tombstone pile driver, is it's so sick. It's awesome. And they protect that move too.
Doing it.
I think they said it in
the Master. Doesn't he do it twice to HBK in that?
He does. Dude, but that's insane. The thing is only three men had kicked out of the tombstone pile driver before that point. Mm-hmm. I think one of them was the Undertaker. It was like Undertaker, his brother Kane, who's also supposed to be like this insane monster. I forget the other person was, but it's a very rare thing to do. So like, you know, when someone gets hit with that tombstone pile driver, they're done. So having HBK kick out of that.
That was crazy. Yeah.
It was amazing. Yeah. God, it was so good. And then the moment too, this is why sometimes the commentary is just so amazing when they're doing that replay of him kicking out of the tombstone. And then you have JR listing off each of the moves, all those major moves Taker's done, the chokeslam, the last ride,
dude, I love
the tombstone, and a kick out, and a kick out, and a kick out. It's so good, bro. Oh my God.
HBK was going for it.
Yeah. And he's amazing too. The beatings that he's willing to take are phenomenal. His move too, the sweet chin music, other people call it like the super kick. Since that's his specific finisher, it's the sweet chin music. He's the best one to ever like do that move. It looks so good anytime he does it. And then the one where it was after that first tombstone, when he hits it on Taker, you seem like that was going to be it. Cause again, that's one of the best, like the sound of that when they hit that slap of it. Sounded so good. Also the chops, like the people when he gets hit on the chest, you could see there it go red.
Yeah. His chest went bright because he was hitting him like four or five times as hard as he could. And his Undertaker's chest, like he ripped off his shirt to show how red his chest was.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
So, yeah. So that
I love the good show. Dude.
It's so like the pain, the brutality that they're feeling in that is very real. You could see, I mean, after when he pinned him and then Undertaker's just like laid out there for like 30 seconds and his chest, like you could see already like the bruising taking place, like some of that redness already turning to like purple. Wild. But yeah. And then the ultimate finish, that's what I'm saying too, like all those false finishes. I mean, that's the most exciting part of any of the matches. Like when you believe truly like, oh, this is it. You're joining in the count. One, two. And then all of a sudden they kick out. It's just, it's so good. It hits so well, which the Roman and Cody match had a lot of those. This one obviously had a lot of those. It's just so good. This is one of the best matches ever, I think, because it's two of the greatest to go at it. Again, Undertaker, HBK. What they were willing to do, put themselves on the line, and the story they were able to tell in there, it was sensational. And that finish, Shawn Michaels was going to do a backflip off the top rope, and then gets caught by Taker, and then boom, tombstone. I mean, that is just, what a way to finish.
The tombstone is so good. It's like, watching that fight was like watching the fight in Game of Thrones between Pedro Pascal and the Mountain, where the Mountain is just swing in and Pedro Pascal is dodging him and dodging him and dodging him. He's more agile and the Mountain is bigger. And then he just slips for 1 second. The Mountain grabs him and just finishes him. That's what it reminded me of, where HBK just had one slip up and Undertaker could grab him and tombstone him and just finish it.
Right, for sure.
Now you did make me watch a Rey Mysterio fight from a long time ago. Please tell me everything you love about Rey Mysterio and why he's your favorite.
He is incredible. First of all, imagine turning in this sort of outfit is different from the typical one he has. I mean, if you just look up Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, of course. I know.
2004.
I was a little confused by the outfit, but I know what Rey Mysterio looks like. He's got the luchador mask.
Exactly. Of course, which is one obviously does too, but yeah, it's more of a whole, I don't know, like a unitard thing or not exactly, but
it's stitched.
It's a full body. It's a
full body thing where the mask is stitched into that full body,
which is different from his normal look. But when you see him, I mean, imagine being a kid seeing him. He looks like a superhero. He's just straight up flying around doing all these crazy moves. You can't top that. I mean, he seems like literally like a real life Spider-Man doing things you didn't think were possible. The athleticism was off the charts. He was always heroic. He was always the underdog because of his size. So again, there's look up Rey versus Undertaker, just like in Google Images, something like that. You should see like the face off there of just the size difference between him, who's shorter than us, and he's fighting against
That's these crazy. People
that are almost 7 feet.
That's
so
crazy.
He always had that underdog ability or that underdog trait to him, where he'd be overcoming the odds. And again, you can see it a lot here, but that athleticism, like he's always able to bounce around the ring, carrying the luchador tradition, the high flyer tradition. He's just the best. I mean, as a kid, especially, I mean, he made you believe impossible things were possible. So that's why I always loved him as a kid. And even now, dude, he's 49 years old. Mm-hmm. And I just got to see him last week at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
That's insane. He's still doing crazy stuff. I just on SmackDown last night, he was in a triple threat and he was doing these insane matches or insane moves rather. So yeah, the energy he brings, the athleticism he brings, the overall, I mean, he's someone you want to root for too. He's never been a heel. He's always been a babyface because it's just impossible to root against him. He's just so heroic and nice. You want to believe in a guy like that. So that's why he was my favorite when I first started watching wrestling. Still my favorite now, even though, again, I mean, I guess Cody Rhodes currently is like who I'm more interested in seeing in a match, but Rey is the all-timer, number one. So this match in particular, I thought was a great one to show just because of that athletic ability. Again, certain things, which it's hard to, since you aren't as well-versed in the wrestling, it's hard to see some of these moves as so crazy and distinct because you haven't seen so many of the like normal progression of matches and the normal types of moves that get done. But there were moves we had never seen before getting done in this match. And that's a testament to both Eddie, who is also, I mean, one of the greats, but Rey and their particular chemistry with each other, but also just their willingness to go out there, put their bodies on the line and give a great story. This one too, Roman versus Cody, since you watched that one, obviously that had the big heel versus babyface dynamic. Shawn Michaels and Undertaker was interesting because they're both legends. They're both beloved. You could kind of hear it too, where the crowd would break out into chants of HBK, like, let's go, HBK, let's go, Taker, stuff like that. So it was like completely split, and neither of them were really being like heel versus babyface. It was just two legends going at it, and who do you want to win? This one definitely leaned into that heel and babyface dynamic with Eddie just being a vicious, monstrous little guy.
Just trying to rip off his mask. Just breaking his back over and over again. Do the backbreakers on Rey Mysterio because he's so small and so light. You could just pick him up and throw him right in there. He's so agile to do those moves. Mm-hmm. The times he threw him, just it was masterful watching Rey Mysterio throw himself around up along the ropes, up onto the top turnbuckle to do flips and shit. I've never seen a wrestler do flips like that before. In such an agile
speed
with like immediately following a backbreaker is crazy.
I know. Yeah. But in particular, like the backflip off the top rope.
Yeah. That was crazy.
DDT.
And then slamming into Roman and pushing him into the barricade. Is that what you're talking about?
Eddie. Yeah.
Eddie. Yeah. That was crazy.
Well, there was that one, but the one where Eddie, like he lifts him up, he hops onto the top rope, backflips off of it. And then like hooks him under his arm and then they crash into the canvas. That one was great.
Yeah.
And then the other major one was where he front flips over the ropes. Again, these people being able to like clear the ropes in one jump is insane to me. But then lands on Eddie and then does the move they call the Hurricane Rana, which is just a great name, first of all. But yeah, just essentially like hooking his head with his legs and then flipping behind him and flipping him over. Just amazing stuff. So yeah, the agility, athleticism on display in this match in particular were great. It also had nice stakes to it because it was Rey for his mask versus Eddie for his title. So yeah,
oh, so they explained well. If Rey Mysterio lost, he would have had to take off his mask.
Yeah,
that's brutal.
And so they explained sort of in the commentary there of like, it can be a death knell for one's career if they have to take off a mask. So also, here's a little history lesson. So this wasn't WWE, it was WCW, mm-hmm. which was the rival of WWE at the time. WCW did make Rey take off his mask like a year later, I think.
Damn, that's cruel.
A year or two later. And then so there's a year or two where he wrestled without a mask. And then when he was going to do his WWE debut in 2002, he went to the Luchador Council and asked them. Because again, when you take off the mask, it's supposed to be like, that's it. You don't get it back. And so he asked them if he could put on the mask again. And they let him do it because that's how much of a legend he was already. And then he debuted in WWE and the rest was history. He became, I mean, the best luchador that certainly we had ever known. And then I think even in Mexico and luchador circles, he's widely considered one of, if not the best. So he's an absolute legend in this match, which is a big throwback, but it proves just how amazing he is. Is it 27 years?
Since when?
Since that match.
When did that match come out? 1997? Yeah.
27 years ago. This man's still doing it. He's still putting on bangers.
Oh, yeah.
What a guy. What a legend.
Absolutely, bro. That's awesome. Good for him. God, 27 years ago. It was only 1997. Oh, my God. We're getting old. Oh, my fucking God.
But yeah. All right. So those were some of the matches. But, again, wrestling is a lot more than just a match. There's the entrances, of course, which you saw there in the highlights of the WrestleMania XL. And then there's also promos. There's the work on the mic where you get to craft your character, interact with the fans, and try and drum up interest and engagement in an upcoming match so that there's a lot more investment, that people have emotions poured into it so that whatever the outcome is of that match feels like it matters. So I selected a few promos here as well for you to take a look at. I featured prominently The Rock.
You did. A lot of Rock promos.
So just because I wanted, you know, you to see back then of like why this guy became the guy he is now, obviously a major Hollywood star, but it only became that way because he got to the top in wrestling.
He was very charismatic. Very good heel.
Yes, sir. The Rock in a 1999 promo against Billy Gunn. What'd you think of this one? The one where he was in.
He's got the full gear with the glasses.
Yes, and the silk shirt and everything mm-hmm. coming out there. Yeah, he looked very different than he does now, but he looked so cool back then. Mm-hmm. But this one, I mean, it had all the catchphrases. It starts out with him going, "Finally, The Rock has come back," to whatever city he's in at that moment.
And then he shits on the city. It's Sacramento. He just shits on Sacramento.
True. Oh, that's The Rock concert that you're talking about.
Oh, am I? Oh, I'm wrong.
Yeah. I'm talking about the one before, the one where he was in the long sleeve silk shirt.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about now. Yeah, where he has the mic and he's just, what is he? He's shitting on Billy or something?
Yeah, Billy Gunn. Yeah. So let's talk about that one for a second. Because again, he has all the catchphrases in there. He created a new one in there, which was, again, a great moment where he's pretending to be God, speaking to Billy Gunn, who's pleading. He's like, "Everyone thinks I still suck." And so God's like, "Bob, but my name's Billy. It doesn't matter what your name is." That particular thing, "it doesn't matter," where he like cuts someone off after asking them a question and goes, "it doesn't matter what you think," or "it doesn't matter what your name is," became one of his catchphrases because of this moment. So it was minted in here. And then there were a bunch of others. Jabroni, of course, is a own created word that he threw in there.
Jabroni?
Yeah.
I never knew that. Jabroni's a favorite of mine.
Well, there you go. You got The Rock to thank for that.
Jabroni's a good one.
If You Smell What The Rock Is Cooking, of course.
That's that one. That's one I know. Yeah. Everybody
the one that he does too, which he doesn't do much anymore, but he did it in that The Rock 99 promo against Billy Gunn, which I think is great, is after he was like, oh, the heavens will shake again, chills will go down your body, tears will go down your cheek, and piss will roll down your leg. The heavens will open up, and then what will sound like millions, and then the whole audience chants in and says, and millions. Like, that part is great, because that's the only type of catchphrase that you can do, which depends on the crowd. You have to be over, right? You have to be like beloved and well known, because otherwise it would just fall flat. So that's how you know the man had them all in the palm of his hands. So yeah, he was great in that. I think it was a great encapsulation of all his catchphrases, his charisma, all that stuff. The Stone Cold Beer Bath.
That one was awesome. You can see why people love Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Dude, he's so cool. He's just so cool.
He's just the epitome of anti-corporation. He's here and he's going to douse you in beer, Vince McMahon and The Rock.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was again during his like the corporation era.
Just the whole truck pulling in is awesome.
And everything. Dude, yeah, I know where it like hits that one part of the like truss with the WWE logo on it and it like slightly gets pushed out. That was insane to see. But then he shows up, drops a little bit of his thing, the SmackDown Hotel. That's the other thing too, The Rock, the whole, you know, Friday night SmackDown, that's because of The Rock that show was created and named SmackDown. Because his whole thing was check into the SmackDown Hotel. So then you have Stone Cold come out, say that stuff. I'll go to the SmackDown Hotel, roll right into room 316. He's just so fun. And then, yeah, the beer bath, which obviously, I mean, you know, his whole gimmick, like finishing match, and then he'll pour a bunch of beers out for everyone, crush him on his head and all that. Yeah, that was sensational. That too.
If you're ready for WrestleMania, give me a hell yeah. Hell yeah.
There you go. I was like, you're not going to leave me hanging there.
Sorry.
There you go. And then we have The Rock Concert.
So this one was a little bizarre for me. This one was one where I was like, I could see where some people would think he's charismatic, but I think The Rock is just being a little annoying here. But he, in a good way, like he's a good heel. But I'm really wanting to root against him. It's a good promo for Stone Cold.
That's what you want.
It's a good promo for Stone Cold.
I think he is, though. It's hard not to. But when he's in there and he's the best part of being in Sacramento is an hour and a half, I'm going to leave Sacramento. Like all of that stuff, just when he's able to get the heat from the crowd is so funny. When he's doing the same, like, keep it down, hold your applause. When like Stone Cold shows up and he's like, hold your applause. It's just so hard not to be charmed by him in that moment. So he's a great heel and it can, I mean, for you, it seems like it worked if you're like, oh, I want to see Stone Cold beat this guy. But regardless, he's so entertaining doing his whole rock concert. It was a great moment too. I'll be sure to come back when the Lakers beat the Kings in May.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Always the best thing to do is just take a dump on
the sports team,
hometown team of the sports team. So yeah, he did great there. Also, I think it's great because this had the commentary of JR and Jerry Lawler in there. Jerry Lawler, if you heard like the one guy squealing, like being happy and being like, look at all the girls going crazy for The Rock. That dude makes The Rock's promos so much better because he's like fangirling over The Rock the whole time and is always like supporting him behind his back. So I thought that was also a great, great showcase of how the commentary and especially how they have basically like the informative sort of straight man commentator. And then they have the color commentator who usually is playing a heel role, which I think is always a fun part of the commentary is one of them is like rooting for the bad guy or being the advocate for the bad guy. So that's another fun part of wrestling there. Anything else you want to say about the Rock concert?
I just love when the truck comes out. Who hops out? Is it Seth No, who opts out first?
No, this is the Hurricane. The Hurricane. Green guy?
Yeah, the Hurricane. Yeah. And then it's the fake out, and the Rock's like, get him out of here, and the cops arrest him. And then that gives Stone Cold the excuse to come out and just attack him, and then he destroys the Willie Nelson guitar.
Right.
Because Stone Cold doesn't give a fuck.
He don't. Not at all. That was funny, too. When he he brought the cops out initially, and then the people were booing, and he's like, don't boo the cops, they're your cops.
Yeah.
Just the ad-libs on that stuff is...
It's really good.
So fun. Yeah. That's a great segment. Again, The Rock and Stone Cold, anything they did was golden. So, good stuff. And then, I had another promo, a more recent one, although I guess it's over a decade now, so not that recent, but of a more recent era in WWE with CM Punk. So, what were your thoughts on this?
He was as promo far promo? Anti-establishment as I think a person can be and still be in the establishment. Like, that, like, he literally just took a mic and was just shitting on the WWE for a minute and a half straight before they cut him out, which, I mean, it's planned, of course, that they're planning mm-hmm. to cut him out. But, like, damn, they really built up his character as somebody who is hugely anti-establishment.
Yeah. So that's part of a great feud. And I think I referenced this in the Royal Rumble rant or something like that. But this was during that time where, so it's June, right? Mania takes place in April. So at the end of the previous WrestleMania, The Rock had come out, interfered with a match between John Cena and The Miz. And then basically that set up, the very next night, it set up The Rock versus John Cena at WrestleMania the following year. And they've never done that before, at least to my knowledge, of like setting up a WrestleMania the night after the previous WrestleMania. So CM Punk knew at this point that he wasn't going to be in the main event. And it was going to be The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. Mm-hmm. So... the fact that, again, this is one of those great promos because, again, he's not going out there saying this stuff unless it's signed off on at least a little bit. But they're able to lean into the real frustration and aggression and stuff like that he would have. So it's both, it's not like planned, written for him, like he came up with this stuff. Obviously, it's approved, but it does draw on real life. And so that's what makes it great is it blurs those lines of like how much of him saying like Vince McMahon sucks and like I'm not pushed in the program, anything like that. Mm-hmm. I hate all these people that are getting put over me, like The Rock. How much of that is real and how much of it is fake?
Yeah.
You don't truly know. And a lot of that stuff, I mean, we know from later on when he left WWE, he did feel strongly about a lot of that stuff. He did get a nice push after this, but he still, and to this day, he has not main evented WrestleMania, which is hilarious. That was, again, 2011. And yet, The Rock just main evented another WrestleMania, and CM Punk has yet to do so. Mm-hmm. Although, that's only because of injury. He would have main evented this past WrestleMania if he hadn't gotten injured. But so much of what he said there felt prophetic. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I think didn't age well is him saying that I'd like to think the company will get better after Vince is dead, but it'll get taken over by his idiot daughter and doofus son-in-law. Currently, it is being run by that doofus son-in-law, and it's amazing. So he was wrong about that one thing, but I did think that whole, like, especially his comments about Vince McMahon and how you need to suck up to him. I mean, that stuff was very true.
Yeah.
Like, you needed a backstage politics and be...
Oh, yeah.
The fan favorite, or be not the fan favorite, but Vince's guy. Like, he needed to like you in order for you to be put over in any big way and get a big push. So, yeah. He's also one of the greatest on the mics. He definitely does have the, like, anti-establishment personality to him. But he also is, like, any time he's on the mic, it's something entertaining. So, that's the other major element and dimension to wrestling. So you can have these great guys that are amazing in the ring, like Rey Mysterio, Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, and you can have the guys that are like untouchable on the mic, like CM Punk, The Rock, Stone Cold, and then you get the fusions of them. A lot of them are able to, you know, hold their own in both, but yeah, there's these two sides of wrestling for sure. And so I wanted to give you a taste of each of them.
Yeah.
So yeah, overall, what are your thoughts going through this journey of some of these selected promos and matches.
It's certainly still not my favorite thing to watch, but I understand the appeal a little more now. I understand why you're so invested in the story and the storytelling. And I understand why it's entertaining. I just suppose, I don't know, I'm not as invested in going and watching every event that comes out and staying informed with it. It's just like another thing to track, and I'm not still as obsessed with it. I do, however, love The Undertaker now. The Undertaker's so cool. Dude, the Tombstone. Oh, God. It's just the ultimate pile driver. I can't get over it. It's so cool. Just the hype video of 16-0, Tombstone. I'm just like, how many times has he fucking done this? This is insane. The ultimate finisher.
Absolutely.
Tombstone pile driver.
He's amazing. I mean, if you wanted to watch another great Undertaker match, WrestleMania 26, Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker, they ran it back, but with bigger stakes. Shawn Michaels put his career on the line.
In what way?
If he loses that match, he would quit.
Whoa.
So it was Undertaker is like your streak against my whole career. Either you go 17-1 or I never wrestle again.
That's crazy. I imagine Shawn Michaels wins.
I think you should watch the match because it is a banger. Again, this is one of like the greatest matches ever, I think. That match holds its own along with it. And because it has those bigger stakes to it, it hits so well. So if you wanted to check another amazing Undertaker match out, I would say go for that one.
Sure.
But I mean, yeah, I wasn't anticipating that you would be converted or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm glad that you at least you can see the appeal of why.
Certainly.
Both on like the athletic front of just watching it like as a sporting event. I mean, the stuff that they're doing is amazing and incredible. And even though, again, it's like, oh, it's planned, it's scripted. The pain is real. Like they're going, they're taking these crazy bumps.
That's the big appeal of it. I don't know how the fuck they are hitting it that hard. Because that canvas, you know, it is a thin layer of protective foam and then just sheer wood or table or whatever it is, and they're slamming onto it. They're just hitting the ground. It's just the ground. And they're hitting it really, really hard. They are pile driving. They are suplexing. They are doing flips. They are doing elbow dives. They're throwing each other out of the ring, just onto the concrete floor. Mm-hmm. They're smacking into fake cameramen and the referees. Dude, those poor referees, sometimes they get the shit beat out of them. And like it's planned, damn.
Very true. But yeah, so from that angle, you know, it's definitely entertaining and there's a lot going on there. But then the whole storytelling side of it too. The promos, the character building, all of that stuff, I think, adds such another amazing layer to it.
Yeah.
And then you can get, if they do it right, you can get an amazing build to an amazing match that finishes the story and has an amazing crowning moment for a great wrestler.
Cody Rhodes.
Cody Rhodes. He did it.
The story. Good for him.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that, you're able to appreciate a bit of what these wrestlers are doing as athletes and as storytellers.
Absolutely. Now that's all the time we have. If you'd like to give your thoughts on the show, you can email us at theboxofficeshowpod@gmail.com.
Our main title theme for the show is Sundown by Joseph McDade.
If you like the show, please give us 5 stars on whatever podcast app you're listening to, and be sure to tune in next week. Have a great rest of your day.